Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week, highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WCNU LP 102.5 Radio
Cata,
Farm Workers Spanish Radio Station, from the show Si Se Puede. Cathia Ramirez interviews Elizabeth
Henderson,
farmer at the Peacework Farm in Wayne County, New York, about organic farming and the community-supported agricultural program during the pandemic.
My name is Elizabeth Henderson. Most people call me Liz or Lisa. Well, I started farming in 1979-1980, and my farm was one of the first farms to be certified organic, starting in 1985. And my farm was one of the first community-supported agriculture farms in the United States.
Cata was founded in 1979, so it's been 42 years.
Yep.
So that was the second question that I had, how long you've been farming. Would you like to talk to us a little bit about what you like the most about farming organically?
Well, I wanted to get out of schools. I had been studying and then teaching, and I wanted to be outdoors and closer to nature. I had a problem in academia that they divide things up into different disciplines, and I've always sensed everything as being interconnected, so it was hard for me to respect the borders, the frontiers between different areas, supposedly, of human knowledge. And in organic farming, we look at everything as interconnected, just as indigenous peoples do all over the world. And that is the foundation of the methods that organic farmers use. It comes from indigenous peoples farming in Asia. The big book that introduced many people to organic farming was by Sir Albert Howard. And he was sent to India to teach the natives how to farm. And he had the humility to notice that Indians were really very good at farming. And he instead learned from them and then brought their methods back to England and the United States. So recycling nutrients, rotating crops, making compost, those are all things that are done by indigenous farmers in China and Japan and Korea and India, in Africa, all over the world. And in Europe, too, peasant farmers use those same methods. So that's one of the things that I really like about organic farming, that it puts us in touch with a different pre-scientific understanding of the universe. And it doesn't mean we can't use science, but it's much closer to nature and the natural way that things work, the way the soil knows how to feed plants. And human beings and our science are starting to catch up and understand about the microbiome and how all the microorganisms in soil function. But we don't really understand it completely.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. It knows how to happen all on its own. Just the way a woman's body knows how to deliver a baby if you don't interfere with it. Microorganisms know how to feed plants. And if you have healthy plants, the animals and the people who eat those plants are going to be healthy.
Was it hard to farm organically at the time that you started?
Well, it was hard to get information. There were no universities at that time in the United States, very, very few teaching organic agriculture. And when I called up the cooperative extension when I was just getting started and I asked, could you please give me some information about how to grow raspberries organically? The woman on the other end laughed at me. She said, you can't do that. So I didn't call back for a long, long time because you could do it. You just couldn't learn how from them. And so we learned from farmers and gardeners teaching one another. And I actually think that's a better way for people to learn.
In your farming, how much do you farm or I'm sure that it changed, might have changed throughout the years if you were first in Massachusetts and then in New York. So if you could talk a little bit about like the spacing and maybe some of the things that you could grow, like crops, or if you also deal with animals.
Well, when I started farming, I was farming on about 4 acres of raised bed. And then when I moved back to New York, we were actually farming 25 acres, about a quarter of which was always in cover crops, and the rest was in crops. And we had 300 members, 300 households who were members of our CSA. So we were actually producing quite a lot of food. But I learned to do that gradually over about 10 years, which I think is how long it takes to learn a craft like organic farming. You can't just do it automatically.
You mentioned that you had several numbers of family members as part of your CSA. Could you describe what a CSA is?
Well, a CSA is like a club where people join a farm, or it could be a group of farms working together, and they get a packet of whatever the farm has every week. And there are tweaks on it recently. You can use software that allows people to order exactly what they want, or everybody can get kind of a basic set of crops and then choose their favorites or not get the things that they hate in their weekly share. But it's a club that supports a local farm and shares, the members agree to share the benefits of organic farming, getting really well-grown, highly nutritious, nutrient-dense food. But they also agree to share the risks. So if the weather is terrible and the crop fails and they get a little less in their share, they don't get their money back. And they agree to do that so that the farm can survive to go on the next year. When you sell at a farmer's market, if the weather is terrible and it rains, nobody shows up. So you come to the market with all your crops and then you take them back home again. With a CSA, people get food every week and they agree to take what the farm can provide. And my experience has mainly been with vegetables and small fruit, rhubarb. I've raised chickens and hogs for my own purposes, but I've never produced those for sale for market.
So what you're saying is that people sort of pay up front before the season starts?
Well, those people who can afford to do that do. We've always had payment on a sliding scale so that we say if you make approximately so much, we hope that you'll pay the market value of the CSA share. But if you're making more, maybe you can pay more so that some people can join and pay less. So there was a difference of several hundred dollars between people who paid at the bottom and people who paid at the top of the payment scale. And some people paid all at the beginning of the season and some people paid in installments. And we always took SNAP EBT payments. So for that, people can only pay every 2 weeks. And they're not allowed to pay in advance. So for a while, we were able to get an EBT machine for free. But after they stopped providing that, it was some kind of grant that disappeared. We were able to have people who were going to pay with EBTs write out coupons in advance. And then we would deposit them every 2 weeks to get our payment from them.
So how many members do you have now?
Well, I'm no longer farming. I'm retired, and I'm actually a member of the core group that helps run our CSA. There's a bunch of members who voluntarily did many of the administrative jobs that you need to keep a CSA going. So collected the money from the members, scheduled people's work, oversee distribution. So I'm a member of the core group, and I helped recruit other members for the core group and got people to volunteer to help with distribution. And then there are other people who are the coordinators of the distribution each week, so they're in charge. And the farm brings the food to the Abundance Food Co-op, and that's where we have the distribution. But we've been doing our distribution at the Abundance Food Co-op for over 30 years. I think this is the 33rd year of the Peacework CSA. She's here. In the past few years, the food comes from Mud Creek Farm, which has a much younger farmer. I mean, after a while, you just really, your body says it's time to retire. And so I enjoy getting the food that most of the work is done by somebody else. And I go out a few times a season and volunteer at her farm.
Would you say during the pandemic, did people get affected? People that have, or farmers that have CSA programs, did they get affected or did they get more support?
Well, I think actually more people have joined CSAs because of the pandemic. For one thing, the CSA farms were very quick to figure out a safe way of doing the distribution. So the minimum of people touch the food. The farmers would bring the shares, and those people who were healthy enough could just pick up their own share in a container. And those people who were particularly worried could stop and open their trunk, and someone could put the share in their trunk. So it was like no touch pickup of the food. And people who experienced that last year were quick to sign up again for this year. What I've heard from CSAs all around the country is they had an easier time getting all the members that they wanted than they've had in the past.
Yeah, I feel like the pandemic was a reality check for many people, especially in thinking more about where their food comes from. I know I've been doing a lot of more outreach. I mean, I've always told people that to really think about the whole process of where their food comes from, and I think about everyone involved in the chain. And so that's what we use to get people involved in our community gardens. And then last year for us, it was a lot more work too, because as people were being unemployed or not the community that we serve didn't qualify for unemployment, food was one of the main issues or immediate needs of people.
Yeah.
So for me, I felt an urgency to grow as much food as possible. And I know we've known you for quite some years. Even when I first started doing this kind of work, and every time I see you at conferences, I sort of we update on what we've been doing at the community garden. So I don't know how much you've heard. I'm sure you're probably part of our newsletter. We grew almost 1,000 pounds of food this past year in one of our community gardens, the one in New Jersey. And we started a market day, and we also partner up with local distribution efforts to provide some of the fresh produce.
That's really wonderful that you're doing that.
And I've always thought about this CSA component of it. I mean, we're not there yet, but I don't know if you've met, the farmer from Sin Fronteras Farm in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Young Farmers Conference maybe in 2019, and he was sharing about his work and what he grows. And that made me think about having a CSA that's more geared towards the community that we serve. So maybe having small packages, like a salsa kit where people can get, onions, garlic, cilantro, and peppers and tomato.
The second clip comes from People's Kitchen. Emma Restrepo, host of the show
Dos Puntos
at WPPM and Filatinos Radio, interview for Scrap Radio Project of Chef Christina Martinez, co-founder of the People's Kitchen that serves everyday hot meals, art, and social justice to those in need. The interview was in Spanish, so for this version in English, we have Megan Storm, producer of People's Kitchen, and
Gabriela Daza
of the Scrap Radio Project. We hope you enjoy it.
¿Qué estás haciendo aquí?
Picando cebolla.
¿Cuánta cebolla picas en el día?
Ay, no sé, mucha.
Amigos, estamos aquí con Cristina Martínez. Ella.
Friends, we are here with Cristina Martínez. She is originally from Mexico, and she is known all throughout the United States.
She is the owner of South Philly Barbacoa, and now, recently, she is also the owner of Casa Mexico. Okay, Cristina, I have a couple of objectives for us today, and one is to talk a little bit about this connection that you have with food and with the kitchen. Tell us a little bit about how that came to be.
For me, I've always thought that food is the thing that unites families, because we can go to work every day, but the most important thing is the reunion of the family at the end of the day. And this reunion is when we are sitting together at the table, sharing beans, rice, tortillas, or bread. I believe that this is a powerful force to be inspired by when cooking for the community in general, and primarily, well, the people who want to eat something different. That is what always motivates me.
You tell us that you see the kitchen as a way to serve the community and at the same time, a way to bring families together. Has this way of thinking brought a certain type of activism into your kitchen?
Of course. We've been active since 2015. We've been cooking, inviting chefs from other communities to help us with right-to-work dinners, where we talk and express the sentiments of the people who work in kitchens, what happens behind the scenes, who's the backbone of the kitchen. So that always motivated me, and because of that, I'm always active in supporting the community, depending on how the restaurant industry is changing.
You speak a lot about your culture and about immigrants. For example, the immigrant presence here in the Whole Kitchen. Why do you think that more than anyone else, Mexicans, Central Americans, but especially Mexicans, are the ones behind the kitchens in many restaurants in the city?
Because, fortunately, we realize as Mexicans that we carry this calling for food in our blood, in our homes, in our ranches, in our small towns. There is always someone cooking, and that person, they're the essence, the spirit of the unity of family. So when we immigrated here, we understood that the spirit of love for the kitchen shined in our eyes, and to have the opportunity to work in a restaurant and carry out our talents and discover our abilities with a knife, with our imagination, to create a good taste on a good dish, there's much to enjoy, and as Latinos, we have that in our blood.
Cristina, you spoke about your calling, and immediately barbacoa came to my mind. That recipe that you have and that has been successful in the city, no less in a city that is, in a sense, very restaurant heavy. No, Philadelphia is very famous for having good food. What is the history of barbacoa and the history of your recipe? What is that?
There developed a very large and very intense necessity to put these plates on the table because I knew that there was the potential for the community to receive this food. Unfortunately, we always focus on making more and more and more and a larger menu, more opportunities, more money. But for me, my work was done, and the idea of making a small menu in barbacoa, in La Pancita, in El Consome, hot tortillas were, for me, the only thing that I really wanted to give South Philly.
When you talk about that, I think of simplicity and the simplicity in your heart. Its spirit and generosity. Speak to us about your heart. I'm sure that the simple things you offer come straight from your heart. What's in there, Cristina?
I think that simplicity is the most important thing about food. When you're cooking, when you're focusing on marinating the food, when you're humbly serving food, it is simple because we don't need to go great places with great luxuries or expectations of a fancy meal. I think the community and I have so much respect for simplicity because that is how I am, because food is simple, it only needs to taste good. The essence of food has no judgments, and the value of 100% traditional food is not something expensive to pay for, but it is rather a privilege that we get to share with the community. For me, the respect for the community has always been and will always be barbacoa.
Cristina, many of us know about your experience of being an immigrant, which is similar to the experience of many of us. That is why you are deeply connected with this community. But here is a very important experience of yours that says a lot. How has it been being famous, undocumented? I'm not using it, but undocumented and famous and without documents, let's say it rather. And here, present, right? In a corner of this area of South Philly that is super Mexican, super Central American,
but above all, super Latin, and you're on the corner saying, here I am present, preparing my simple but rich food, rich in flavor, rich in knowledge, rich in culture, but here I am without hiding. What is the experience of a woman without documents?
Well, it is a wonderful experience to show that someone left from a small town, from one of our small towns like I did. I'm here, present every day, opening my restaurant, generating work, and giving opportunity to people who want to work at Barbacoa. Making a presence is something very important. It's something that leads us to perseverance, responsibility, a lot of commitment to employees, commitment to the community, and the commitment to making a presence every day is, for me, something super bright. It's one of the precious pearls of life that have to be polished little by little. And we all have these pearls in our hands. We are all these pearls. We only have to polish them. We have to help them shine. We have to help polish each other's pearls so that others can shine too, to the same magnitude, so that everyone can shine in their own way according to their job or specialty. And it takes a lot of commitment to get that shine out.
Cristina, do you feel part of this city?
Soy parte de esta ciudad porque esta ciudad me arrebató y cortó un árbol muy joven, lleno de vida. Y en esta ciudad está sangre y carne de mi carne en esta tierra. Entonces, Filadelfia es mi casa. Filadelfia tiene parte de mi vida, parte de mi cultura, parte de mi amor, parte de mi esencia. Esta es mi ciudad. Esta es mi casa.
I am part of this city because the city snatched and cut a very young tree from me before it was due. And in this city of this blood and flesh of my flesh in this land, Philadelphia is my home. Philadelphia has part of my life, part of my culture, part of my love, part of my essence. This is my city. This is my home, this is my people, this is my community, and this is my son.
For those who do not know, Cristina lost a son, and he is laid here in this city. And while I am seeing him here, I am seeing him in her eyes with tears. Cristina, what do you say to so many entrepreneurs, as we say here, as the Americans say, so many people like us who open their business, and their business is like the base, the vision for the future?
Well, I can share that Philadelphia and the new businesses are growing because there are new opportunities. This is the country of opportunities, and we have to take each one and obviously educate ourselves with respect and grow little by little. We cannot eat our cake too fast. But if we can process and digest everything we receive about communication, about food and beverage, if we can process what we learn, if we can ask ourselves how we have to continue growing little by little. To have a business, you have to have a lot of patience. You have to be humble, be simple, and mainly you have to have that desire to be able to grow, to be able to shine, and to be able to give opportunity to more people and give sustainability to our families who are waiting for us in our home countries.
Cristina, estamos aquí en la parte del restaurante donde.
We are here in the part of the restaurant where tables were served before the pandemic. What is the art we have here? Well, describe a little of what you have here. Why do we have this?
We have this art that's by one of the very popular artists here in Philadelphia, Isaiah Zagar, who likes to put the murals on the walls that reflect the culture, and he uses recycled materials to make art all over the city. Every 3 months, we're changing with different artists.
Do you like that it's like an art gallery?
It is a gallery, yes, because having those paintings gives us a unique presence, too. We don't have television, but we have art. We have culture. In the other restaurant, we have another type of gallery that we are also presenting. It's from a popular graphic art style in Mexico and Puerto Rico, and we are educating visually, apart from serving a traditional Mexican food. We are putting the art for people to be educated, especially the children who are coming. They're learning and getting to know our culture.
Excellent. I appreciate that you not only have Latin artists, you also have African-American artists and American artists of all kinds.
Of course. We are here at Barbacoa supporting people who have their art, who have their paintings, who have their photography. We also had an artist from Copenhagen who painted some pictures. Those are exposed in El Compadre. There are three different artists on display right now. A European, one of the popular graphic artists from Mexico, and also Isaiah Zagar. So we are bringing all of this culture in the same room, in the same essence, to educate the children who are growing up in this community.
It's like mixing cultures, similar to the clients that come here who are from all over the world.
Yes, we are trying not to lose that one, the unity of different seeds, like corn that is born in some red, some black, other white, other yellow. The human always tries to separate this seed and give a kind of space to each one. But at the end of the day, the earth, Mother Earth, gives us that essence of being together, of mixing the corn, mixing the culture. And man always tries to divide, but we must remember that the earth shows us, the earth who is generous and puts everything together, that there is no real division of anything.
Limpiando la cebolla para la pancita, para el consomé.
¿Cuántas cebollas limpias más o menos?
7 arpillas de cebolla fueron.
Cristina, ¿qué es esto de People's Kitchen y cuál es su participación en eso?
Bueno,
Cristina, what is the People's Kitchen and what is your role in it?
Well, People's Kitchen originated from an organization by Chef Jose Andres, who made some blessings during the pandemic. He put money in the hands of Barbacoa so that we could help the community by making food and giving the food away sporadically. Chef Jose Andres and the organization that gave this money did not give us any more, so the organization Dos Quince and other organizations joined us to continue the efforts. This project continues to be kept in the hands of the restaurant El Compadre, which is active and always there. And well, I gave that space talking to Ben so that we cannot push too much on Barbacoa. And now Barbacoa works with El Compadre to bring chefs and cooking services, and I'm doing my preparation more to help the chefs who are supporting us. There's a communal pressure to help, and we are focusing on now mobilizing this People's Kitchen, this kitchen that we are using Monday to Friday, all day, every day, cooking with very good chefs, high-quality chefs. It is multicultural, the food is from India, some African-American, American, and with many products donated by the organizations that we call that give us products and help generate economic support for the community. Dos Quince helps provide support and ways to keep feeding this great Philadelphia.
How would you translate the People's Kitchen in Spanish?
For me, El Compadre, or People's Kitchen, is a place where a food process is carried out that is given to the community. Not the town, because the town is a small place, but we are multicultural. Philadelphia is a big city, and you have to feed it. There is a lot of hunger, there is a lot of need. So for me, it is not a town. It is a city, and a great community.
Gracias, Cristina. Siempre es un placer enorme poder conversar con usted y aprender de usted.
No, pues para mí es un honor poder.
Thank you, Cristina. It is always, always a great pleasure to talk with you and learn about you.
It is a pleasure to share what is Barbacoa, Casa México, and El Compadre.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Jeffrey Jones, and I'm the co-host of Community Voice PHL radio talk show at WPPM LP Philadelphia 106.5 Philly Camp. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.